Hello everyone, this is your producer. Just wanted to let you know that we will be discussing Toy Story 3 in this podcast, and we will be spoiling. So, if you don't want to hear any spoilers, go ahead and fast forward to the 24-minute mark, or advance to the next chapter on your MP3 player. Also, special shout out to Default for introducing us to the fact that the Guile theme goes with everything. Everything! It even goes with this podcast. Enjoy.
Hey everybody, welcome to Nerds on the Rocks. I believe this is episode 7 now, with your host. My name is Michael, aka Magus113, back on the hosting seat again. And with me are, a couple of our regulars, Earl, aka Brackabone, and Xantar. Say what's up, gentlemen.
What's up, Doc?
Hold on a second. I'm sorry. I just have to get over the fact that I'm not the host anymore. You kicked me out.
Don't worry, okay.
I'll get over it. Just keep going. I mean, damn it!
Oh, all right. Let's.
Your responsibilities. I don't know how two hosts would work with three people, but no.
Okay. So anyway, we have a pretty interesting show for you guys today. We will be talking about Toy Story 3 that just came out. I believe it was last week. So hopefully, you guys have had a chance to go and check that out. And we'll be touching on the subject of violence in video games. Are we drawing the line at some point, or are we has the line already been drawn, and are we passing it? And of course, we always have our fun little segment of cocktail chatter. Okay, so yay. Let's get started. Toy Story 3 came out last week. It was the 18th, I believe, and I believe it's shown a lot of box office success. If I'm correct in assuming that.
The number 2 movie 2 weeks in a row. Well, the number 1 movie 2 weeks in a row. That sounds better. There we go.
Now, on the scale of Pixar movies, how well did this do? Do you know?
I think it's the best opening for an animated movie ever. So, on a scale of any movie.
So, somehow this managed to become the best Pixar movie ever in terms of box office.
I don't know if the end gross is there, but I know it's the best opening.
Yeah, so far it's already surpassed the budget. It had a $200 million budget. It's already surpassed that by $10 million. So, and that's in 2 weeks. It's not too bad, if I do say so myself.
Actually, it's right behind It's already surpassed Toy Story 1, and it's right behind Toy Story 2 in terms of gross. But you know, that's without adjustment. And there's been 15 years between the first and the third. So you know, there's been a couple of price hikes here and there for movie tickets. I mean, I paid, I think, $13 to go see it, and...
Well, you saw it in 3D, right?
No, I did not.
Oh,
$13 is a normal price of a ticket in the city. I think 3D would have been, like, $16 or $17.
Wow. $8.50 per ticket was taken off since I had bought the Blu-rays of the first two, so I had to reduce tickets, but it didn't lessen the experience at all for me. I thought it was a great movie. A little morbid at points. Are we getting into spoilers, by the way?
I assume so.
All right. Well,
we will insert a spoiler warning.
All right. Awesome.
So let's go ahead. I actually have a question for everybody.
Go ahead.
Did you actually want a Toy Story 3?
No.
They did it well. I mean, I would have gone on a lot better without it. I think Pixar has probably had a lot more interesting movie ideas than a lot more interesting movie ideas than just making another sequel. But I mean, are they starting to take the route of sequels? Because I believe Monsters Inc. 2 was also announced,
and also Cars 2.
Yes, and Cars 2.
Ooh, Cars 2.
And yet, The Incredibles, the one sequel I've been craving, is the one they haven't. Like, Incredibles is like that one thing they don't really mention that much.
And you know what? I think it's probably because I guess it doesn't fit like a Disney mantra. That movie was pretty violent as far as kid movies go. I mean, it's not bloody or anything, but I mean, there's a lot of punching and you know, a couple of beat down.
Getting sucked into a jet propeller.
There's that. So I'm sure that they don't want to be all over that. Like, they don't want to be all over that. Like, I've been waiting for a Blu-ray copy of that for I don't know how long. Like, since Blu-rays were announced and I've had the means of watching them, I've been waiting for one.
Yeah, so have I, because I actually saw, and I don't know, we're getting so far into The Incredibles, but I was watching Dan Credit was on ABC Family last week because I had a copy on DVD and I took it to my daycare when I worked there a couple of summers ago. Never got it back, so I don't have a copy of The Incredibles because I've been waiting to buy it on Blu-ray. I don't want to buy it on DVD again. And it's, you know, such a movie I want to sit down and watch and enjoy without commercials or, you know, like just when I have time for it.
Okay. Well, anyway, let's get back on topic here. We have... Okay, so we know that Toy Story 3 is the best Pixar movie box office-wise. Now, what about your personal opinions? Do you think that this was their best Pixar movie, or, you know, that it was good but just not great?
Well, I would first go, I don't even think it's the best Toy Story. I still think the original holds up best. So, I mean, in terms of Pixar, it wouldn't be the top movie from them in that regard.
It did make me cry. Well, did it make you cry?
I got close. I was with certain company that I was trying not to show some said emotions, but it was pretty tear jerking. Like, at least not like in that really like the most morbid part of the movie, I guess, with the incinerator, but definitely at the end when Andy was handing off the toys over to the little girl.
Which is an interesting point now that you mention about the movie being morbid, because this is in many ways a movie about, well, they don't come right out and say it, but it is about death. By the time we get to Toy Story 3, a lot of the characters we have grown up with are gone. For example,
Bo Peep,
and I'm trying to remember Weezy. The name of the penguin.
Yeah, it's Weezy.
Weezy.
Etch a Sketch is gone.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Even Mr. Spell. Mr. Spell was out. I don't think he was in the second one either, though, was he? Mr. Spell?
I can't remember.
Well, either way.
In any case,
even Buster's older. Yes. What's it called? His sister Molly's a lot more grown up. And I mean, the good thing is, I mean, at least I didn't expect them doing this, but I'm sure they didn't focus too much on like Andy and what he does. I don't think it's the best Pixar movie. I think the best Pixar movie, in my personal opinion, was probably either Up or The Incredibles. But I think The Incredibles is kind of getting over there. I do think that the original was the best. I don't remember why, but the second one never really stuck with me very well. I went to go see it with a bunch of my cousins when it first came out, so my memory on it was really spotty until I watched it again. And I still watched it, and I was like, "Hey, you know, it's good, but it's not what it's not what the original was, you know." And hopefully, they don't have. And I mean, I'm sure it's going to be that issue when it gets into when they start getting into more sequels. But you know, whatever. I digress. What about you, Xantar? I don't think we've heard your opinion on that.
Well, other than the fact that it made me cry, it actually also had a lot to think about. There is, of course, the elements of death and everything changing at the end of the movie. Remember, spoiler alert, at the end of the movie, Andy gives up his toys forever. Pretty much.
Yeah.
Do you think that they're going to take that as an opportunity to try and make more sequels?
I think they said that.
I hope not.
I don't know if you know the history of Toy Story 3, but it was pretty much a way for Disney to blackmail Pixar to sign with them. Because originally, Toy Story 3 was going to be a hand-animated movie. Done by Disney by itself when, you know, Disney Pixar were having their little scuffled. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of like, oh, we're going to hold your cherished franchise over you, and if you don't come back, we're just going to butcher it. Because it was something about them like being sold in an auction or something stupid like that.
Wow. Damn. Interesting.
I also thought that the storyline between Barbie and Ken was quite interesting, which, I've just got to mention. Pixar has some serious talent. No, I mean, of course they do, but check out some of the names that have been associated with Pixar in the past. The original Toy Story, I don't know if you knew this, one of the writers was a little guy named Joel Cohen. Yes.
Oh.
Joss Whedon was also involved. Joss Whedon was also involved before he became Joss Whedon.
Yes.
So there's that. The vocal talents, of course, we know that Tom Hanks and Tim Allen are in there. I mm-hmm. found out that the voice actress for Barbie is the Little Mermaid, which seems kind of perfect somehow. And, let's Let's see what else.
I didn't even know that.
Michael Keaton was Ken.
Yes, Ken is played by Batman. The T-Rex is played by Vizzini from The Princess Bride.
The piggy bank is played by
John Kiff Ratzenberger.
Kiff from Cheers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I think he's at least had a minor part in every single Pixar movie.
I believe so. He's had a role in every Pixar movie.
Yeah.
There's somebody else, I think, who's had a role in Pixar. I think it's him, and there's a Pizza Panda truck in every Pixar movie, except for The Incredibles, apparently.
And Andy is still played by Andy. Well, the original Andy is still Andy.
Is he really?
Yes, it is still the original Andy.
Oh, wow. How about this one? How about Andy's mom is like consistently through all three movies is actually Laurie Metcalf, Jackie from Roseanne.
Oh.
Yeah. And you know, you think about it and it makes sense. Also, I noticed this when I was watching the movie, but Jeff Garland was also in the film. He was the unicorn, Buttercup.
I see.
Are we familiar with Jeff Garland? I hope.
Yes.
Yeah. Who is that?
Lotso, Ned Beatty, I believe, is his name.
I think it's pronounced Beatty.
Beatty? Oh. The name, like, what he's done... Oh, he's, Jesus Christ, I'm looking at his picture right now. Who is he? He is from... he's actually another one of the cast members on Roseanne. He's Dan's father.
Oh. Apparently you're a huge Roseanne fan.
You know what?
I'm not judging. I would have not pegged. I get Roseanne's sister. I just would never have pegged Dan's dad.
Well, that's the first person I see. I mean, that's why I see when I'm looking at the pictures.
Now, since we're talking about voices, do you think that Tim Allen actually spoke Spanish?
I don't think so at all.
No.
He sounds way too much like, coming from a Hispanic, I think he sounds way too much like an American guy to be able to pull off of a good Spanish accent.
It was a pretty good Spanish accent, wasn't it?
He has a lot of time to train. It's like he's had many major movies to do.
That's true, but I mean...
Now, hold on a second. There was Wild Hogs.
Like I said, he hasn't had much to do.
Where he was riding around on a motorcycle with John Travolta. That was big, man.
I never saw Wild Hogs, so I'll take your word for it. Let me see. What else can we talk about? Are we on record saying that we don't want them to try and make any more sequels, even though we're pretty sure they probably could?
To Toy Story?
Yes, to Toy Story.
I think it's good. I don't know where they would go with it. Because, I mean, as much as it's about the toys, it's also about Andy's development. And I think it would just be cheating to start over with a new character and go through like, the same kind of arc.
But in the sense, of course, it is cheating, but also in that sense, it makes it easier for them to make more money, moolah. That's what they want, I would imagine.
Somehow I don't think that's a problem for Pixar.
Yeah,
also true. Doesn't Steve Jobs just like give them ass loads of cash? Like, here you go, take all the money you want, fuck around, do whatever you want, here, go.
Well, there's that, and there's also the fact that all of their monies make massive amounts of money anyway.
Yeah.
That's true.
They're good enough to make movies that don't insult adults as well as being enjoyable to kids.
Yes. In fact, the other point that I wanted to make...
I'm sorry to interrupt. I had another question. What did you guys think of the short film that they showed? Day and Night, I believe it was called?
Ah, yes. That was awesome. I think that is the best short Pixar has ever made.
Can any of
you people describe it? I can't. I cannot put it into words. I cannot describe what it looks like or how it works.
I would imagine. Well, then again, it's a spoiler alert. So if anyone's listening, they probably already saw it. So I guess we. Just,
I was gonna say, do we have to spoil a short that takes 5 minutes?
Yeah. I've had more enjoyable Pixar shorts. Like I like them a lot. Like I own the short film collections, and then the ones that aren't on that DVD or Blu-ray, whichever it is I have. I'm trying to look for them like in the releases of the DVD or the DVDs and the Blu-rays of the film. And I'm hard pressed to remember which one is my favorite, but that one's definitely not really up there for me. Like they're usually really funny or really clever. Like the one that they showed with Up was really enjoyable.
Yeah,
that was really nice. I liked it a lot. And that one was even kind of sad too, you know, but I don't know. I think it could have been better. It was a clever idea. I just didn't enjoy it. I can see why people would appreciate it, though. What about you, Earl?
I think my personal favorite one's the one from Up. I enjoyed this story. I like this one as well. I mean, it hit some of the right spots. Some of it was a little weird, like them checking out those chicks. But the end, it was nice. I don't know why he focused on that one chick in his stomach, but the thing with that and like dancing to Vegas and stuff was kind of nice. And I like the part where they kind of came, you know, embraced dawn or sunrise, sunset.
I just love the interplay between what was going on inside them and what was going on with them.
Oh, the sound effects were awesome.
Yeah, that was pretty good. I liked that a lot. I'm looking through just Pixar's Wikipedia page because Wikipedia knows all. And apparently the two Toy Stories are the only ones that have reached 100% on the tomato meter, on Rotten Tomatoes.
Toy Story 3 was up there at one point. I don't know if it still is.
No, it's at 98.
It's at 99.
Oh, it's at 99 now? Okay. Oh,
who gave it a negative review?
Yeah, some one person, and I was reading his review, and it's like, it spends half the time talking about how A-Team is a better movie.
What?
And how he's too old to care about toys because he doesn't babysit anymore.
All right, Earl, we've got to do this as a public service. What is his name, and where can we email him?
I don't remember his name, but even Roger Ebert was making fun of him because he's like, the whole world is just going to wait for this one guy to review it, because apparently he tends to do that. Let's see, there's only three Rotten reviews, so I guess it wouldn't be that difficult to find.
All right, I'm going to find him and give out his name for both of our listeners to harass him. The other point are we talking about Toy Story again?
I'm actually just looking at Pixar stuff in general, because I also think it's funny that I know people that swear to Cars, and Cars is actually the worst reviewed movie from Pixar, and I wasn't a huge fan of it. And then I'm just also looking at what's coming up next, because apparently Cars 2 is going to be the first one that's
okay. Just for the record, how bad is Cars reviewed? Because I mean, saying you're the worst reviewed Pixar movie really doesn't say that much.
It's in the 70% range on Rotten.
It's still pretty decent. I mean, like you said, Toy Story 1 and 2 have 100%. Toy Story 3 has 98%. Being the worst reviewed would be like 95%, and that would still be better than most movies.
It's also very true.
Cars is the only movie I have not seen. I actually have it queued up to watch today because my friend blackmailed me into watching it. I've been avoiding it because I've heard mixed things about it, but I guess I have to put that on the back burner at some point and man up.
But about Toy Story 3 again. The other thing that it brought to mind for me is that the difference between Pixar movies and all the other animated CGI movies is that Pixar has this way of using stories and jokes in a way that is kind of universal. One of my favorite jokes in Toy Story 3 is when they are over the dumpster and Lotso is threatening them or something, and then Barbie suddenly pipes up and says, "Wait, power does not come from the oppressors, it comes from the will of the people," or something like that. And everybody else just looks at each other and shrugs, like, "Oh, I didn't know Barbie had that in her." And that is one of my favorite jokes, and it is the sort of thing that little kids can sort of laugh at, and adults will find really hilarious. Meanwhile, I went back and watched Shrek 2, and that movie, I liked it at the time, but it does not age very well. The jokes include a shot-for-shot recreation of Lord of the Rings, the ring falling on his finger, there is the upside-down kiss from Spider-Man that they parody. All this stuff is not going to make sense to anybody in 20 years. But
it
all the jokes in
people now,
right? And all the all the jokes in Toy Story, I think, are still going to hold up.
Okay.
Yeah. I was going to make a point. That's another thing I'm not ready to Shrek to, but the time difference between like Toy Stories. It's like the generation they're aiming for. I mean, granted, Jess, it's people like us who saw the origin of Toy Story when we were like 10 or 11 or whatever. But like, I mean, the time difference between Toy Story 2 and Toy Story 3 is 11 years. So the audience, like, you know, like little kids and stuff, weren't around when the original Toy Story came out, or even the second one.
Yeah, but that's why they re-released them, so you know they can so that they can have, you know, the kids watch, like the parents will go out and buy it and the kids will watch it. And then, oh, you know, hey, it's another movie about stuff that I already know about. But I'm pretty sure that Pixar was very understanding in the fact that they made this movie for the people that saw it when, you know, like 10 or 11 years ago, you know, they knew that they were going to go see it. So it was very much a movie for the Toy Story fans than a kids movie.
Okay, just one more question before we move on.
Sure.
And this is something I was thinking about the other day. For a movie called Toy Story, does anybody here actually own any toys from the series?
I used to own a Mr. Potato Head, but that was way before Toy Story.
Yeah, I have to say, like Mr. Potato Head, and I hope nobody, but you know, like Ken and Barbie and stuff are like toys at a university, like Etch a Sketch and stuff were toys that existed before Toy Story, but like Buzz or Woody or.
By the way, like, Mr. Soft Taco Head is awesome. Or was it a tortilla? I don't know.
I think it was a tortilla.
So, yeah, nobody owns any toys?
I don't own any still. Like, I used to own a Buzz Lightyear after the first one came out.
Because, yeah, I think it came out just when I was getting out of toys, and it, like, the second one came out before I got back into toys, and now it's kind of in that weird phase where I really don't want to buy Toy Story toys, but...
Oh, I had a Woody doll, too, now that I remember.
Yeah, because I remember, I know you had the Wall-E doll, or robot, or whatever.
I still have it, actually.
Okay. So I didn't know if anybody actually owned any Toy Story toys.
So, before we move on, I just have one last question. What trailers did you guys get for this movie? I got a lot of trailers for really bad-looking CG movies, mostly from DreamWorks.
let's start with the one about the owls. I can't remember the name of it. Did you see that one?
The Legend of Godot.
And then there's one about a bird who will not fly, and apparently he lands on hang gliders a lot.
Didn't see that one. I saw the one for Megamind that I saw when I went to see
Shrek Thereafter. I got Despicable Me, and that is interesting.
Not much of that one, though. I think I got that one, too.
The Sorcerer's Apprentice, which I'm still kind of iffy on, because what's his face can go either way most of the time.
And then there was Tangled, i.e. Rapunzel. Yeah, actually, that looks like it might be okay.
I think I'd have to see more of it.
Right.
Yeah. I wasn't too convinced.
Like, I wasn't sold on it, but I wasn't against it.
What was getting tiresome is that every trailer was advertising the fact that the movie is going to be released in 3D.
Yes.
About the seventh time when the announcer said, "Now coming to you in digital 3D," I was getting a little bit over it.
The thing I don't get, and maybe it's just because of the way it's like, whenever they say that, they always have like some stupid shot where it's like, "Oh my gosh, you could be seeing this in 3D." I'm like, "Thank you, I'm not that stupid." Like with Despicable Me, that's interesting. But like the part where they said it's in 3D, it's like him going down a roller coaster, and you don't see the roller, you just see like the motion of going down a roller coaster. And
I've heard, by the way, that Toy Story 3 was done in 3D sort of afterwards and not actually very well.
Yeah, but it's easier to do post-processing when you have stuff that's rendered like that than like with movies like The Last Airbender, for example, where the movie's already shot, but they post-process the 3D into it. I mean, you can take raw data and just re-render the stuff. That's not that big a deal. It seems a lot cheaper to me when you have a movie like The Last Airbender or others. I think like Clash of the Titans, too, when it was released way back when, that had the post-processing. So.
Yes,
way back when in April.
Yeah, well, seems like a long time ago. That's how forgettable that was. Okay, so we're ready to move on. All right, we're ready to move on. Our next subject is violence in video games. Are we crossing the line? Let's see. Well, we all know that with newer, better technology for console gaming or PC gaming comes more realism. And definitely more realism is good in certain occasions and bad in others. It just depends on how you look at it. Are video games getting too violent?
Should we first, I suppose we should first talk about the article that inspired this, Earl. This is your topic at Game Tavern.
Yes, it is. It's a post from Jeremy Parrish, who writes for OneUp.com, and I guess for me, I'm EGM. And it was about E3 and how the abundance of games like Body Count, which pretty much implies everything you need to know the name, or Bulletstorm, or just a huge amount of first-person shooters like Killzone 3, Call of Duty, Black Ops, Medal of Honor, Heroes, Spec Ops, and how like we're getting to a point where this industry kind of runs on gratuitous violence, and it's like everybody's doing it. It goes into, you know, like, I think the point of Bulletstorm is to kill people in the most fashionable way possible. So like, you're jumping into people, kicking them, and cutting them, and then shooting them up with bullets or whatever. Or like in the Black Ops demo, when they like pretty much bomb a Vietnam village in a helicopter.
Right, and he contrasts that with the story of his, is it his mother-in-law or just his girlfriend's mother? I don't know if she's married to her. I'll check again. In any case, who is Vietnamese? This strikes a little bit close to home because I am also Vietnamese, and told the story of how this mother had an uncle who did not make it to a bomb shelter in time and was eviscerated by a bomb. And so when they retrieved his body, they had to essentially pull his entrails and stuff them back into the body cavity before they could carry him anywhere. Which is a little bit of a disturbing thought to think, carry in your mind as you are watching these people with video games blowing up Vietnamese villages.
Yeah. You also have to look at, they don't market World War II games like Medal of Honor or Call of Duty in, like, Germany, or they don't market them very well because it puts them in a bad light. And they do tend to get realistic, so why would people want to play a game where they're shooting fellow Germans, whether they were Nazi supporters or not, you know? It's kind of interesting because, I mean, I guess I want a certain level of realism to my games, and don't get me wrong, I won't play a game if it's gratuitously violent. Like, I mean, I love the God of War series because it's a pretty fun hack and slash game, and yes, there are points where you kill people in, you know, the most awesome of ways, but I mean, if it's overly gratuitous, like, I don't expect every time I shoot someone in the head to have their head explode into tons of pieces. I'm pretty sure that doesn't happen all the time, or at least depending on whatever gun it is that you're using, you know? That's just a little too over the top. That's for people to just say, oh yeah, I fucking shot that guy's head off. You see that? There's stuff all over the place. Like, I think one of the biggest offenders is probably the Gears of War franchise. I hadn't seen anybody get mauled to death with a chainsaw like that until I had seen it on a friend's TV. So, it has its points where it does get to become a little bit too much.
I was, you know, it's weird how, but I don't mind Gears of War's violence. I know it's kind of weird, and I know that it's gratuitous and stuff. I own them, but on the same hand, it's like because they take out that human element, you're killing like monsters. There's no, they don't hide that fact. They aren't monsters with human feelings. They aren't, you know, like humans who are deformed. They're monsters. They live underground. They attack you. They destroy your cities. There's no, you don't have a connection to them in some ways. And it sounds weird, I guess. That, I mean, it is one of the most violent games I've played. I mean, you're cutting people in half. You're curb stomping them. You're shooting them with fire arrows that explodes them from inside. And I don't have an issue with that.
I think there are two separate issues here. One is, and the original article does not necessarily do a great job of teasing them out, but I think the two issues are that, number one, some games these days seem to be marketed solely based on the amount of violence they contain. The most egregious offender might be something like Manhunt, to a certain extent, Mad World. Games where the selling point is the fact that they lovingly render lots of gore, and then there are other games which are violent, but which have other qualities to them. For the, the Gears of War series, whatever else you might say about them, they do play pretty well. If the enemy simply got shot and then fell down without any blood, it would still be more a very fun game to play. So that is one issue. The other issue that he touches on is that it seems that violence may be inevitable in video games. Or maybe not. That is an open question. Maybe not all games have to be adversarial in nature, because up until now, all video games have been about defeating someone else, whether it's in racing or by killing them or whatever. And I don't know if there is any other way to design games.
Well, I mean, there are games where you don't... an example of that is something like Fallout on the PS3, where you don't... Like, you have a goal and stuff, but there's, like, no type of enemies or whatever. It's just, like... I don't know how... But the thing is, that starts to fall into the realm where people start calling it like a casual game or a non-game. And I think that's part of the issue, is that gamers themselves start to enable these games where you don't have an end goal, where you don't have a purpose, as these type of things, like these bad things they don't want to touch. It's like the type of experience they don't want to have. It's these lesser beings, these lesser games that they shouldn't associate themselves with.
I want to say that there's also, like, I think the biggest issue with violence in video games, and I guess this is more of a, I'm not a parent, far from it, but this is definitely a more parental point of view, a kind of a psychological point of view, is the fact that, okay, you're not killing real people, or you're killing monsters or whatever, but what about when you get into multiplayer aspects of the game, you know, where you're not exactly killing a physical being, but you're killing something that is being represented by one? It's a little bit of a stretch, but especially now with when you have voice chat, you know, you get desensitized to this kind of behavior and this kind of language and stuff. You know, you get a living out of listening to people talk and say all these things to each other. Like, I've seen videos of recordings of people on YouTube, and they're saying stuff that they'll go to their house and kill them, even though they have no means of being able to do that. You know what I mean?
I get that, but this is a point that I guess was brought up in the thread, is that, like, that as long as video games have been around, there's been violence in them. But do you think that because the graphics, you know, improve and, you know, jump in time, that the violence should follow that curve as well? Like, yes, people can point out, like Mario, they can say it's fun, you're crushing people to death. But I mean,
that kind of gets back into what Xantar said about, you know, little monsters, lesser beings, or whatever.
Yeah, it's like with an example. Okay, I don't mind violence in Halo, because as mature as people say that is, for the most part, you're killing aliens. They usually don't breathe that much. Master Chief doesn't. You know, you don't get the impression that you do, because it's not like the rest of the first-person shooters nowadays, where like your screen starts to darken because your vision. I don't know how that works. I mean, I don't know if you get him blood in your eyes or whatever.
I think that's just more of added effect, really. But
and they don't use. I mean, I get it's added effect. I just mean, like, it gives you the image that the person's feeding, and that's how you know your health is deteriorating. But like, I don't mind that, because it's not real weapons, it's not real enemies, and it's not really gory. Now, something like Call of Duty, where you're mowing down more people than an action star in a game. And these are actual humans.
Yeah.
And you could see them fall and stuff like that. And you could see your own character getting hurt. It kind of humanizes the game, and then you kind of...
Here's the funny thing, though. Call of Duty's hasn't been very offensive as far as violence goes. I mean, you can get headshots or whatever, but usually it's just a blood splatter and they fall to the floor. No dismemberment, none of that stuff. But yeah. I think that's maybe because it goes more on the opinion of it's more realistic violence. It's realistic in war, like in the war sense, you know.
I think that what Earl is slowly edging towards is that there is not really a moral dimension to the violence in these video games. Now, I know that people roll their eyes when you talk about morality and stuff like that in video games, but hear me out for a second. Movies, there are movies that d- deal with the after effects of violence. There was a pretty good one with Jodie Foster going on a revenge quest a while ago, and about how it destroys her to essentially lower herself to the level of people who are trying to brutalize her. There are lots of movies where they meditate on the violence and how it's not going to solve everything and that sort of thing, and they grapple with the issues. A History of Violence is also a very good one. I cannot think of any games which really grapple with issues of the morality of violence in the same way. BioShock, I suppose, to a certain extent. I suppose you could say the Metal Gear Solid games, because you can technically go through them without killing anybody. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, to get through to the end of a game, you're going to have to kill somebody. There is not really a choice about it. And if video games would like to grow as an art form and be seen as legitimate commentary on the world, they're going to have to grapple with these issues. And the other thing is that at the extreme, you could one day have graphics that are so realistically rendered that they look exactly like a real person. Okay. It will be, one day we will have it look as if, for all you can tell, you are looking outside a window, and there is a person actually there, and you push a button, and the bone fragments fly out, and blood sprays, and it looks exactly like a real person getting shot. Or to take it even more extreme, one day you could design a game which looks exactly that realistic, and you are shooting a little child. This is when we get to a level that becomes very uncomfortable, because, yes, of course, it is not a real person. But is that depiction, is participating in that depiction of a murder something we want to do? And it is not something that is not a question that I have seen people grappling with in the industry.
Here's an interesting thought, though. Now isn't technically the only time that people have had issues with violence in video games as they've been getting more realistic. I remember, you know, back in the Atari days, that there was a big issue with the Texas Chainsaw Massacre game. It was just a side scroll, and you're running around with this thing that was supposed to look like a chainsaw. And the fact that there was something that represented something that was violent, and you would just run around killing people, people got really mad about this. You know, so it's definitely not a new issue.
I was about to say, what did that say about an industry where it's like 30 years and people are still having the same type of issues? Where it's like, I mean, because it's the same thing with Mortal Kombat. It's Mortal Kombat 2 buying, you know, is it, you know, stuff like that. And that's not an argument we're going to have here. But the fact is, it's like the video game industry hasn't gotten past that point where it does anything but really serves to justify like adolescent tendencies, where it's like, you know, killing stuff is good. It makes you feel strong. And like a superhero. Like, yes, there are games like Heavy Rain, where I don't think you have much in the way of, like, you know, you don't have much violence and stuff. There are action pieces and stuff, but it's not the centerpiece of the game. Or, like I said, like, Fallout was an example of a game that doesn't have any action at all. But for the most part, 90, 95% of the game, it's like you versus them, and it's not usually just one-on-one. It's you versus, like, an army of people, and you're shouldering them, and you don't care, because they're standing between you and the end.
Interesting point.
I have just one last question. What do you think? Sure. What effect do you think this has on the potential for appealing to women in video gaming?
Like women as women gamers. Okay. I don't think. I think that if women have wanted to be interested in playing games, that they're already doing them already. Like I know girls that play video games. It doesn't make them any less. You know, it doesn't make them any less feminine or whatever, but it's not a, like, I know girls that they get enjoyment out of playing, you know, violent video games, if only because the game is good, or just because, hey, maybe they just like that kind of stuff. Maybe they like seeing violent movies, et cetera, et cetera. So if they want to try to appeal to having more girls play video games, it's definitely not the right way to go, but I don't think they're going to make that. I don't think they're going to make that change anytime soon. Like I said before, if they want girls to play video games, and they're playing them already, they're not going to try and cater to their interest. I'm pretty sure there's a very good you know, there's a very good majority of males that play video games as compared to females.
You see, I'm going to use a movie example. It reminds me of a couple of years ago when the Sex and the City movie came out, and it was like the top movie at weekend, and people were surprised at that. Like, they were under the impression that women don't see these type of movies, like, they don't go to movies or whatever or something. And it's the same thing with the video game industry. It's like, it's a male-dominated entertainment segment, but there are ways to kind of reach out to girls. The only problem is, and this happens with the video game industry in general, is like, they treat everybody like they're stupid. Like, you're a male teen, so everything you enjoy is killing stuff. You're a mom or dad, so everything you enjoy are mini games or like cooking games or fitness games. You're a kid, so you have cartoon characters. You have your SpongeBob and your Disney games. And it's like, okay, we're going to go after this segment. So we form this game into this one perfect niche where it only appeals to one group of people. And if you don't hit that, you end up with a game that doesn't sell. Like, we just had a discussion about Toy Story 3. And the reason it works is it's designed as a kid's movie, but it has adult human and adult themes that adults aren't insulted to watch. And the game industry hasn't reached that point where it's like, we'll make a game that anybody can enjoy without having them feel sick. We're catering to the lowest common denominator here. And, you know, you were going to say something?
Yes, I was just going to say that along that point, I think one of the biggest clusters of female gamers is probably World of Warcraft. And it's worth noting that in World of Warcraft, you don't necessarily have to do all that much fighting in order to succeed. In fact, for some people, the whole point of World of Warcraft is just the social aspect and not so much leveling and grinding.
Yeah. Like, I'm sure The Sims does well with females as well and stuff like that. But you're not, like, I don't think there's like the Barbie games, like the Bratz games where you play dress up. That's like catering to like that 12-year-old tween segment. And it doesn't really maintain female gamers, because what do you do once you're out of that phase? You don't start playing. I mean, I know girls who play Halo, and I know girls who play Call of Duty, but they tend to be the exception and not the rule. And I mean, I'm sure I'm going to get grief for this, but the one company I think that always, well, not the one company, but Nintendo has a tendency to always make games, I think, that doesn't seem to cater to one group. They don't play it like, okay, you know, like, when they did Kirby, I'm sure they weren't saying, like, this is a game that's only for the hardcore male gamers, because you're still playing as a pink Powerpuff.
Okay.
I'm not going to give you grief for that.
No.
I'm sure people will. You know, it's going to be like, oh, he's that Nintendo guy again.
Well, I mean, if there's anything that they do, it's that they like to, at least in first-party games, they like to make stuff that appeals to a lot of people. I don't think that you're wrong in saying that at all. I think if anything that only appeals to a certain niche or a certain group of people that play video games or at least observe video games or third-party developers, because they know they want to aim for whatever it is, you know, for whatever it is that excuse me, they're trying to aim for. Like, Ubisoft makes certain games that don't appeal to girls or don't appeal to older people. Nintendo, that's what they made their console around, so they want to try and keep that tradition going. Which is also probably another reason why they went with the art direction that they did for Skyward Sword, because Twilight Princess was a very good game with a fantastic art style, albeit dark, but that fact doesn't make it appealing to all ages, at least for parents who go to buy these games for kids if they see things like this. They wanted to try and go back more to a Wind Waker style.
I was gonna say on the other end is Wind Waker, which didn't appeal to the quote-unquote hardcore gamer because it's cartoony and kiddie, and they have an image to maintain. So it's kind of like they're walking that middle line where it's like, we're going to be artsy, but we're not going to go extremely in one direction where it's too realistic for people, or we're going to go where it's too cartoony for another. And it's kind of like walking that line. We'll see how it goes in the year's time, but yeah, I mean, that's the type of thing. It's like another example, and I hate to draw this out, it's like 2D gaming. Is like, there's a lot of people who see a 2D game and they automatically assume it's not equal to a 3D game, so it has to be like Xbox Live or PSN or WiiWare. And it's like that attitude that the mass, you know, hardcore gamers have, that I think, and that's where you end up with so many first person shooters, because that's the genre that everybody thinks worth it, because everybody's aiming for that market, because that's the genre that sells. But if you're not Call of Duty, if you're not Halo, you don't really find much of an audience there anymore.
One quick note before we actually move on here for me. I think that even though Nintendo tried to go all ages with Wind Waker, I think the fact that Ganondorf took a sword through the forehead, you know, kind of took that notion out of the water.
Just I assume we can put a spoiler alert after the fact. There you go.
Eh, who cares? If they haven't played Wind Waker by now, then they're lost.
There are multiple links.
And maybe multiple Ganons. The world may never know.
What is this, the Tootsie Pop commercial?
All right, so now we are ready to move on to our cocktail chatter, as usual. Let's see what interesting stories we have. Earl, let's start off with you. What do you got?
Yay for me. Well, mine is pretty simple. I don't know if either of you really follow comics that much, but for the past, let's say, year and a half, Superman's been engaged in something with new Krypton. There was a Krypton that we formed, and yada, yada, yada. As comics goes, it ended up that Krypton ended up getting destroyed. You know, there's like no more Kryptonians on Earth but Superman. But during the time, Superman took made new Krypton his home or whatever, so he left Earth. So at some point, they decided that Superman was out of touch with the American people. So for the next year, 13 issues or so, he will be walking across America in a story called Superman Grounded. And, you know, like he'll be hitting some somewhat major cities.
On foot at normal speed?
I don't know if at normal speed, but he will be walking. I assume he'll get into some crazy superhero antics along the way, but he will be walking across America, and you can get... Well, actually, I don't think any of us can get involved, because he's not walking past any of our cities. But
he's not going past... Well, I suppose he is starting in Metropolis, which is supposed to be New York.
Yeah, we'll go with that, but I wanted him to actually visit New York. I mean, it's kind of selfish, I mean, I'm sure. Because they say Metropolis is supposed to be New York, and then I hear Gotham is supposed to be New York. They can't both be New York. But he'll be hitting cities, if you're within 50 miles of Chicago, Omaha, Denver, Salt Lake City, Las Vegas, Los Angeles, Portland, and Seattle, you can kind of make a pitch to DC Comics to get your town featured in the comics. Which is kind of cool. I don't really know why he's walking across America. I mean, he could just kind of fly, you know, greet people for a day, say hi and stuff. But this is the story they wanted to tell. And I'm looking forward to it. It's something different for him, if anything else.
Yes, I have the list of cities here, which you sent to me earlier. I don't know if you still have it, but I thought I'd just name it here. Metropolis, Chicago, Des Moines, Omaha, Denver, Salt Lake City, Las Vegas, Los Angeles, Portland, and Seattle. So it looks like he is avoiding the South.
Well, and Arizona, just a lucky one.
But we all knew that Superman is a Democrat anyway.
Yes, he can't go to Arizona because they're going to deport him. I don't know if you deport him to Krypton or whatever, but he didn't need to go to Miami if he's going to Los Angeles. He doesn't need to visit that South of
Beach. Oh well. Xantar, what do you got?
Well, I'm going to actually do a double cocktail chatter because I finally found that reviewer who gave a bad review to Toy Story. His name is Armand White, and he writes for the New York Press. Just to give you some blurbs here, his review for the A-Team, the tagline is, "The dumb, macho, adolescent, glass-smashingest movie of the year." Toy Story 3, the title of the article is Board Game. Board, B-O-R-E-D. You see what he did there, huh? And the tagline is, Toy Story 3 suckers fans to think they can accept this drivel. So, yes, he gave a better review to the A-Team than to Toy Story 3. His name is Armand White. He writes for the New York Press. I want both of y'all readers to go out there and send him some emails and give him a piece of your mind. Oh, and the other cocktail chatter.
Well, before you move on, I just want to say that he also says that Transformers 2 did the same story and did it better than Toy Story 3.
No, he didn't.
Besides, Transformers 2 already showed the same shot to Graded Throw. Yes, he did. He compared Toy Story 3 to Transformers 2 and called Transformers 2 the better movie.
I sort of missed... I'm sorry. I don't remember the part where Woody gets killed and goes to robot heaven. When was that?
Apparently you missed... Oh, I assumed he'd go to toy heaven. But, and the climax was in an hour-long setup for a five-minute fight.
I see. Anyway, the other thing that I wanted to chatter about very quickly is that Magus and I have both been going through Twilight Princess. Again, he beat it very quickly. I'm trying to do a 100% completion, but this...
If you can consider just under 30 hours very quickly, then, I mean, you know, hats off to you. That's still a little bit of time, quite a bit of time.
I think it means if you did it in less than a week.
Yeah, that's true.
Yes. I played it just after finishing Final Fantasy The Crystal Bears, and the difference between the two worlds is very striking. Obviously, Twilight Princess is a much better made game, and playing them side by side gave me an idea of just why. It's all in the details. Nintendo pays attention to details and throws in all these weird, extraneous details that make the world feel a little more real. For example, in Hyrule Town, or Castle Town, I suppose I should say, there are two people standing at both ends of a street, and if you talk to one of them, he says, "Do you see that guy over there? He's staring at me. I don't know what's going on. Why is he looking at me?" And then you can walk over to the other person at the end of the street, and he tells you, "Do you see that guy over there? Why is he staring at me? I'm going to keep staring back at him." And it's these weird, these little details like that, and that make Twilight Princess a much better made game. And then there's also the fact that the fundamental gameplay mechanics actually work. But this gives me a whole new respect for Twilight Princess. Whatever else you might say about it, Nintendo is up there with, in my opinion, up there with BioWare as one of the best world makers in the business.
You're going to get some grief for that.
You probably will. quick side note before I go in, or quick question I should say before I go into my cocktail chatter, since did you like the Crystal Bears at all? It doesn't seem like you did, but...
No, I didn't.
I tolerated it. Yeah. The mini-games were actually quite good.
I heard it was more mini-games than actual combat. Like, the combat... Like, I was looking forward to the game from the trailers, but then I heard, like, it's pretty much revolved around him picking up and throwing stuff at people.
Which works. Actually, it's okay. Because the best thing about it is that you can pick up certain enemies and actually use them. For example, there is an enemy which is a robot. You can rip off the gun arm and then use the gun to shoot people, which is pretty cool. The problem is that most of the fights in the game are timed. So... Mm-hmm. After 2 minutes or whatever, then all the monsters disappear, and you just have to wait around for them to reappear again, all of them, and then you have to try to kill all of them again in order to get your upgrade, which I do not understand why that mechanic is there. I think whoever came up with it probably should be made to work on the Square Final Fantasy kart racer game. Maybe they'll have better luck.
Oh, also, sorry, one more quick question before I go on. And Earl, you're not allowed to answer this question because I know your answer, and your answer is blasphemous. Twilight Princess or Ocarina of Time?
I think that Twilight Princess is a better game. I think that Ocarina of Time is a more important game. How's that?
Okay.
That's a safe answer, but yes.
No, it's not technically a safe answer.
Oh, but if I was to say Twilight Princess is a better game, you wouldn't accept that, huh?
I'm not saying that I wouldn't. I think I'm actually very much tied between the both of them. They're both excellent games. I've played through Ocarina of Time recently enough to know that it's, you know, visually it hasn't aged very well, but it's still a very, very much enjoyable game to play.
It's an enjoyable game, I'm sure. My thing is, and the thing I don't get is, Wind Waker and Twilight Princess, to a degree, are like the accumulation of the technology that was introduced in Ocarina of Time. It's hard to say that it's a better game if it's the same core game that's been improved. Zelda games are pretty much the same world. I mean, it's kind of hard to say when I have Wind Waker, which is, you know, completely different since Hyrule's drowned and whatever. Mm-hmm. But they added more to the combat since Ocarina of Time. And some of it doesn't work as well in Twilight Princess, I think. Like, they kept some of his animations for dodging and stuff, which worked better when he was tinier. It looks awkward when he's in human proportions.
Yeah. Well, but the same could be said when he was an adult in Ocarina of Time, because he still did have the same movements and mechanics.
Yeah, he didn't really, I mean, I could be mistaken, I've only taken the first five dungeons in that game, but he didn't have as many defensive moves as he does in Wind Waker and Twilight Princess.
No, he does not.
But it is very hard to top Ocarina of Time. After all, it had Z-targeting, auto-jumping, and context-sensitive buttons. It invented those three concepts, and now those are everywhere in games.
Oh, I'm not going to say it's not an important game. It's hard to dispute that. It's the same thing with Super Mario 64. I understand why it's important, but Galaxy is so much a better game. And I know that's because of the advances that came in the 14 years between the two.
I think one thing that we can all agree on is that Grand Theft Auto 4 is not a better game than Ocarina of Time.
Thank you, God! Another man seeks the light.
I think we can agree that Grand Theft Auto 4 is not a better game than Grand Theft Auto 3.
I'm not sure that GameRankings.com agrees with you.
To me, and this is probably a different rant, and I feel awful for going, but I think game ranking is just showing that a lot of people are trying to make up for lost time, because there's no way that Grand Theft Auto 4 is better than any of the ones on the PS2, but it's like, crap, we didn't rate the other ones high enough, so let's just fix that now. And I think that's the same thing with Modern Warfare 2, it's like a lot of people missed the boat on the original Modern Warfare, so they're just kind of trying, because honestly, I don't know, and I hate to go again, hate to go on a rant, but I do not know how Call of Duty avoids being marked down for having a sequel every year. If Mario Party people hated for that reason, I'm sure people hate Raven Rabbids for that. Call of Duty has had a game every year this generation, and nobody says anything about that. And there's two games next year, and I'm sure nobody's going to say anything about it again.
Oh well. Alright, moving on. my cocktail chatter is actually pretty short. I'll thank Reddit for this little tidbit of information. Today, I learned that the person who voiced Johnny Five from Short Circuit also voiced Frank the Pug from the Men in Black series.
Really?
Huh. Yeah, his name is Tim Blaney, if you want to look him up on IMDb. But yeah, I actually learned that today, and I mean, you can go and look him up yourself. There's a bunch of other little interesting characters that he's had here and there. Nothing that's really exceptional aside from Short Circuit and Men in Black. But yeah, how do you like that?
He sings Goofy Goober in SpongeBob the movie, and yes, I've seen that movie. I know that song. Don't judge me.
I've seen the SpongeBob movie too, and that is not a movie for children. It is not. It is not. I will stand true to that opinion. That is not a children's movie. It is definitely not a children's show either. I think it's more of a hearkening back to when Nickelodeon shows were disgusting, like Ren and Stimpy and Rocko's Modern Life, where kids shouldn't be watching them, but you know the parents have to sit through it, so they might as well make something for them to make it bearable.
Ren and Stimpy traumatized me as a kid.
Ren and Stimpy was awesome, and my dad loved it, so he let me watch it, even though my mother hated it.
It made me feel like I was on acid. And I didn't even know what that meant.
I'm pretty sure it would still make you feel that way as an adult. Did anybody ever see the revival?
Of Ren and Stimpy?
Yeah, there was like a revival on like MTV. I don't know how long it lasted. Maybe a season, if that. But there was
Nicktoons channel for the cable owners, I think.
But yeah, there was like a new version of the cartoon made. Let's see.
Doing some Wikipedia research, ladies and gentlemen. I do enjoy me some Wikipedia. I know that they sell the DVDs, but like with explicit content warnings now.
Yeah, it's Ren and Stimpy adult party cartoon in 2003. Royancy Sirius is Ren and Stimpy adult party cartoon. The new version was aired during an 8-night programming block on Spike TV and was rated TVMA. The series, as the title implied, explored more adult themes, including a more explicitly homosexual relationship between the main characters, and an episode filled with female nudity.
Wow. Holy shit, that's awesome, though. After three episodes, the entire animation block was removed from Spike TV's programming schedule.
So, yeah, I guess I'm sure they had. Maybe that was the time. Does anybody remember like Stripzilla?
No, I do not.
Okay, I think that was that whole. I think that was that whole little block on Spike TV. There was like Stripzilla, which is about like a stripper superhero.
Wait, Stripperella? Was that the one with Pamela Anderson?
I think that was. You might be correct.
Right. Well, this is an explicit podcast.
I guess that means that since they probably won't show the adult party cartoon episodes, like they won't release them, maybe not anytime soon.
I doubt that. I'm sure you. I mean, you have the power of the internet. I'm pretty sure it would be that difficult to find.
Yeah, but supposedly they had like 9 episodes done. I don't know if they made all. I don't know if they made all 9 of them, but I know that there's at least 3. Okay, there's 10 here. I see 10.
Okay. Oh, I think one of them. I think one of them they said is an episode from the original Ren and Stimpy show.
Yes, it is.
So that might be the 10th one.
Hmm. Interesting enough. Okay, so I guess that's all that we have for today, guys. So once again, this is Magus113, a.k.a. Michael, signing off. Gentlemen.
I'll get you next time, Magus. Next time.
Dr. Kill, awesome reference. And this is not Magus, and I do not plan on getting him, so next time.
All right, guys. See you later.
And it turns out that she is famous for her chant. She does this wherever she goes. She says, fire it up. And the other people say, fire it up. Ready to go. Ready to go. And so for the next 5 minutes, she proceeds to do this. Fire it up. Everybody says, fire it up. And ready to go. And everybody says, ready to go. And I'm standing there and I'm thinking, she's stealing my thunder. I look at my staff, they shrug their shoulders. They don't know how long this is going to go. But here's the thing, Virginia. After a minute or so, I'm feeling kind of fired up. I'm feeling like I'm ready to go. Cycling in the chair. And it feels good. And for the rest of the day, even after we left Greenwood, even though it was still raining, even though I was still not getting big crowds anywhere, even though we hadn't got the endorsement of the people we were hoping for, somehow I felt a little lighter. I felt a little better. I'd see my staff. I'd say, are you fired up? They'd say, we're fired up, boss. Are you ready to go? I'd say, I'm ready to go. Here's my point, Virginia. That's how this thing started. It shows you what one voice can do. One voice can change a room. And if the voice can change a room, it can change a city. And if it can change a city, it can change a state. And if it can change a state, it can change a nation. And if it can change a nation, it can change the world. Virginia, your voice can change the world tomorrow. In 21 hours, if you are willing, to endure some rain, if you're willing to drag that person you know who's not going to vote to the polls, if you're willing to organize and volunteer in the office, if you are willing to stand with me, if you're willing to fight with me, I know your voice will matter. Question for you, Virginia. Are you fired up? Are you ready to go? Fired up! Ready to go! Fired up! Ready to go! Fired up! Ready to go! Virginia, let's go change the world.